and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Each week, we'll be joined by guests from the financial services world to discuss the most pressing industry issues. I'm Amy Austin, news editor at FT Advisor, and today I will be discussing the FCA's latest retirement income data and what it means for advisors and the wider industry with Tom McPhail, Director of Public Affairs at the Landcat, and Mark Ormston, Director of Propositions and Corporate Partnerships at Retirement Line. So welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi.
Hi, Amy.
Cool. Well, the regulator's latest data, which, you know, was highly anticipated as it was quite late to when it would normally would appear, kind of showed that between October 2022 and March 2023, just over 43,000 pots entered drawdown with no advice or guidance, which was equivalent to just under 40%. Now, while this data looked at many other things, I thought maybe this is a place where we can start this discussion, just because there continues to be a trend of less people taking advice when entering drawdown, which obviously isn't great. However, while it kind of looks bad when you say it that way, while the number of people taking advice before going into drawdown has fallen, there are still more pots getting advice rather than seeking guidance or not taking any advice at all. So, Tom, maybe we can start with you. Why do you think it is that, you know, people aren't kind of getting advice on drawdown when it's, you know, it is quite a tricky thing to manage?
Yeah, no, I think you made a couple of really good points there. And it's, you know, more than half of all drawdown transactions did take advice, and an additional 8% went to PensionWise. And broadly, the smaller the transaction, the less likely it is that someone would take advice. So there's that. I think also it's worth just acknowledging, stepping away from drawdown briefly, that drawdown activity was dwarfed by the vast numbers of transactions where people were either encashing their pots entirely or taking enough plus. And again, that was predominantly small amounts of money. Maybe we'll come back to that. I think one of my concerns looking at the data was the apparent decline in take-up of PensionWise. I think for people taking a long-term retirement income, it's also worth noting that for all pension pot sizes up to £250,000, the commonest rate of income withdrawal was over 8% a year. And I'm not a financial advisor anymore, but I'm pretty sure 8% a year is not sustainable. So what we're seeing, I think, is with the big pots where you're more likely to have taken advice, you're also more likely to have taken a sustainable level of income withdrawal. With smaller pots, higher levels of income, or indeed full encashments, and less likely to take advice. So I think we kind of, that to me, that points to, you know, there's not one market going on here. There's some people taking a retirement income and there's some people accessing cash. And I think they're two different things.
Sure. And Mark, what did you kind of think about it all?
No, I think I echo quite a lot of what Tom said there. And I think, you know, another thing that always stands out to me in the drawdown figures is how many people have, you know, first gone into drawdown and only accessed their tax-free cash at the time of setup, so not set up any regular income. And I think this time around, that was about 60% of all new drawdown plans were to access tax-free cash only. So that probably goes into why a little bit as well. People are, if they're only trying to get their hands on cash, they probably wouldn't have taken advice. But I think that's the main theme of the retirement income data from the FCA, is that a lot of people are just getting their hands on cash.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we kind of looked as well at, you know, the annuity kind of sales and what had the number of them that were advised in that. And these kind of done an opposite. They increased, you know, the more people were taking advice on annuity sales. So why, you know, it seems weird that drawdown and annuities are so kind of different in a slight way.
Yeah, and yeah. I think maybe that comes back to an annuity by definition is a retirement income rather than accessing a pot of money. And so maybe people are more likely to take advice or guidance in that context, perhaps.
Yeah. And Mark, I know you like annuities. So what did you think of this?
No, I think that's right. I think when someone's locking into a product that you would hope would last for, you know, a long period of time, in some cases, you know, decades, you would hope to see that people are, you know, getting the right quote shapes and looking over the longer term and not just looking to maximize the income. Because that's the other thing in the annuity data, and again maybe we'll get into that a bit later on, is that so many people are still going for the highest amount of income available. At a quick glance at the data, it's single life, it's level, payments. So it looks like people are maximizing that income. I think this is some of the difficulty with the FCA data, and I'm a huge fan of the FCA data, and I was definitely one of those people that was refreshing the page from about September. So I was really pleased to finally close down that page on my browser this week. But I just think that it's really tricky to get an overall picture of what people are doing, because we're talking about pots versus products. And a lot of these are, you would hope, are the smaller pots, as the data is showing. So you're thinking people with maybe some DB knocking around the final salary, and this is their DC as they've just been caught up in auto enrollment. It's really tricky to get that holistic picture from the data. But the big winner at the moment is the tax man, by the looks of things.
So, I mean, on that point, one of the things that I find immensely frustrating is that there doesn't appear to be any really substantial, qualitative, broad research around the decision-making processes that people are going through. And I'm amazed the FCA isn't all over this. I know they do their financial lives survey, but this is different, this is specific. Why are they not digging into the decision-making processes of those hundreds, thousands of people? You know, what is this process that leads them to buy that single life level annuity, or to cash that pot in, or to go for drawdown at that rate of income withdrawal? We really kind of need to understand what they're doing, because if they're being advised, they're probably going to be okay. You know, they're probably making a good decision because they've got the benefits of an advisor behind them. The ones who aren't, what is going on there? It's immensely frustrating that we don't actually know.
Yeah, I guess
it's really tricky, isn't it? Sorry, Amy.
No, go on, Mark. That's fine.
No, I was just going to say, it's really tricky because, like Tom's saying, is, you know, the data tends to point towards products, but then it's also pointing towards pots. So we don't know actually if this is the amount of products being sold and there's multiple pots going into that product, so i.e. the data starting from a product level, or whether it's starting from a pot level, if you see what I mean. So again, there could be a fantastic piece of work. You know, we've got the starting blocks here, but it's actually confusing the picture for me rather than giving us clarity of what people are doing.
Yeah, I must admit, when the data lands for us, you know, we all go, oh, good God, like, not this data again, because it takes us so long to go through it and, you know, like, compare it to the past years and what we'd done last year, and kind of going through each of the tables, which seem to be split out everywhere as well. So, and it's just a vast amount of, you know, information that people have to kind of intake. And I guess if us sort kind of struggle with this volume of information, you know, who else would really be looking at this, you know, other than people that are really interested in pensions?
So, being interested in pensions, a couple of things sort of just stood out for me on that. One was the vast numbers of small pots being cashed out. So, if you just take that category of pots worth less than £30,000 being taken out in their entirety, those transactions added up to more than everything else put together. So if you took all the drawdown, all the annuities, all the UF Plus, all the small pots over £30,000, they still didn't equate to the small pots under £30,000 being cashed out. So it's 377,000 transactions versus 362,000. So what are we actually looking at here? And also, large numbers of chunky encashments, I mean, obviously the absolute numbers are smaller, but still in the thousands of UF Plus and full encashments of over £100,000. And you're looking at that going, well, do they realise the tax implications of that? What is the decision-making process going on behind that? So for me, there's some big alarm bells going off here that really pose, I think, potentially some quite important policy questions. And look, we've got an election coming up this year. We may get a change of government. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see the next government looking at what's going on here and asking some pretty pointed questions about actually how well is pension freedom working.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of, you know, the important thing here, because would we have seen this, you know, pre-pension freedoms, you know, all this kind of different things happening? And, you know, even then, there was also the kind of worrying fact that, you know, 70% of people actually accessed their pots for the first time and didn't take any advice at all. You know, that's a large majority. They're looking at their pension and going, oh, yeah, I'm just going, you know, by myself, do this, you know. And that's the worrying thing here. But is it because, you know, obviously this data is slightly older, you know, it is the 2020, we're going back to 2022 kind of year. Is it because, you know, we were kind of in the cusp of, you know, the cost of living crisis, people might have been panicking a bit, whereas I feel like now with people have calmed down a bit more, and while it's still hard and while we're still in a cost of living crisis, I think people are kind of knowing how to deal with their money a bit more. I don't know what you think about that.
I think you're clutching at straws there. I mean, I don't know, but it doesn't feel like it. I mean, I think it's interesting that the take-up of pension-wise has declined, yeah. I think, from looking at the data. I've not really crunched it, but my impression is that pension-wise has gone down. So that's not great. And so then you look across at the FCA's Advice Guidance Boundary Review and say, well, is that going to help? And I think they're doing some good work there, but I also think they're quite a long way off actually putting the regulations to bed. There's probably going to be a consultation. I know, you know, initially the boundary review said, well, simplified advice won't include retirement planning. And I think they've had quite a lot of pushback on that. And I think they're having a bit of a rethink on that, perhaps. That's not going to land quickly. My worry is, yeah, you can say, oh, well, it's the cost of living crisis and there's just stuff going on. There's always stuff going on. I'm looking at this 10 years down the line and starting to question whether the policy as a whole, you know, the big substantial framework of it, whether it's actually working that well.
Sure. Mark, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Tom was accurate when we said clutching at straws. Unfortunately, that's not what I was, hearing, on the doorsteps. You can tell that I'm in the campaign mode at the moment, but on the doorsteps at that time, that's not what I was hearing. You know, people were actually being slightly more sort of prudent and thinking things through over that period. We didn't see too many knee-jerk reactions. What I would say is that there's an order to these points, and if we want the FCA or any body to start looking at this data that Tom was alluding to previously, actually we probably need to solve things like the small pots problem and look at consolidation and value for money and these aspects in accumulation first before we can start getting a much better picture, or at least a lot less fragmented picture when it comes to pension income and pension access decisions, because they are two very different things. Now, at the moment, this data, in my eyes, the vast majority is people doing pension access. They're not making pension income decisions. As I said earlier, 60% of all new drawdown plans each year, roughly, it's been between 50 and 60% every single time, is just to access tax-free cash in that first instance. So, we need to get our ducks in a line in regards to the policy and the policy framework. And until we have that sort of greater consolidation piece, I don't think we can have that long-term policy thinking aligned yet, because in my mind, pension freedoms came a little bit too early because we were still having issues with auto-enrollment. And I put issues in quotation marks because, broadly speaking, this has been a great success. It's a lovely problem to have.
Yeah, I agree with a lot. I think that's absolutely on the money, Mark. Unfortunately, so I agree with you. Unfortunately, the dashboard and the default consolidators and whether they go for the lifetime provider or some other solution to the other existing sort of flow of small pots and how they modify auto-enrollment, none of that's going to happen quickly, is it? I mean, dashboards are still a year or two away. Default consolidators longer. Long-term solution of the flow of small pots even longer away. So all of a sudden, we're looking 5 years into the future. My worry with some of this is how much time have we got? Because we're already hitting the downslope of DB payouts, and we've got this wave of 50-somethings who are all moving into the ages where they can access their retirement savings, and they do have these fragmented savings, they do have small pots, and a lot of them haven't saved enough. So, just opening the doors and saying, there's your money, dive in, don't spend it all at once, but off you go. That's a slightly worrying dynamic to be playing out right now in real time.
Yeah, and what kind of thing do you think then should come first? Because I've had a discussion, I think, on this podcast before, and the guests at the time were saying that small pots, is a hard issue to solve. But if we had dashboards which came before small pots, maybe that would, feeding and help sort small pots. But then it's like, then we've got the advice guidance boundary. If we had that come in before even dashboards, so people would know what they're looking at when they're looking at their dashboards. So it's kind of like, well, what one comes first and what one's going to be quickest to kind of, I don't think any of them are quick, are they? You know, everything's going to take a lot of things. So what one would we ideally want to see first to kind of solve this? I don't know if it ever will be solved, but, you know, make it better.
I think from my point of view, if you know, everything was a level playing field, if someone said to me, Mark, like, this is the list, which one's priority, I actually would put small pots solution, whatever solution that may well be, clearinghouse, etc. I would put that as my personal P1, followed by dashboards. But I think in reality, actually, we will probably see dashboards first. I think that's the most likely outcome here, but I'll be interested to see what Tom thinks.
Well, no, I don't disagree with that, and I just think, you know, also politics, policy making, it's the art of the possible. You know, things happen in a scrappy way. Look at how long it's taken to get us to where we are now with dashboards, where we are on the cusp of them, a fully armed and operational pension dashboard actually going live, which is super exciting, but it's been 10 years or more in the making. And some things can happen quicker than others. I think the default consolidators, which will help to solve the small pots problem, that's going to take time. The DWP's work to crash together occupational pension provision through things like value for money, there's a natural limit to how fast that can happen. You know, merging pension schemes is not a quick process. Internally, within Nest or Now or People's, you know, those big master trusts, merging duplicate pots of money for their customers, that doesn't happen quickly. So with some of this stuff, we've just got to be a bit patient.
Yeah, I
would agree. I completely agree with that. I just think, you know, going back to the data for a moment, I'm conscious of time, Amy, but it's something we've referenced a bit. So I was sort of quite eager to discuss it, if that's okay. But was around this decline of pension-wise, you know, for me, when you look at the data, it's really quite alarming. You know, even in the annuity data itself, you know, it's dropped by over half of people having discussion with pension-wise before purchasing an annuity. Yes, there's an increase in advice, but I wonder if it's due to when stronger nudges came in, and maybe something around the regs there, and we're actually seeing more people speaking to Money Helper, and I wonder if Money Helper and pension wise the two things aren't quite marrying up in consumers' minds. So actually they've had a conversation with Money Helper through their scheme, through stronger nudges, and maybe even transfer flagging systems, but they haven't had a conversation with pension wise I wonder if that could be behind it, because I can't see what else is behind such a huge drop. Actually,
do you have?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know whether you're right. I think it's a plausible hypothesis. I think, look, I did a review of the Money and Pension Service a couple of years ago for the DWP, and one of the things I looked at was pension-wise and the delivery of it, and I think it's kind of interesting the way that's now starting to intersect with the Advice Guidance Boundary Review and the FCA introduction of the concept of targeted support and targeted guidance for people that sits below advice. I argued at the time I was doing the MAPS review, and I still argue now, that an answer to this conundrum is to reverse guidance back to the point where the customers are. You know, don't ask the customers to go off and get guidance elsewhere. Bring the guidance to them, and that means getting the product providers to do more of the guidance, which is sort of where the FCA is heading now, with tentatively with the Advice Guidance Boundary Review. I would like to see further progress in that direction, because to me that is a way to help fill the gap that sits below advice.
And could it just be that people maybe just don't know Money Helper is out there, or pension wise is out there to help people? Do you think, you know, the normal average Joe on the street might think, oh, I need an annuity, or I want to have a look at my pension, I'll just go straight to my provider and ask for it and then get it? Or do you think it is, you know, maybe the signposting isn't as good as it could be?
Well, Mark probably knows better than I. My quick response on that is, you know, there's enough, you know, we've got the stronger nudge, there's enough efforts being made to push people in a particular direction. But Mark, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I feel a bit conflicted, to be honest. Part of me wonders whether stronger nudge and the positioning of stronger nudge has made it appear like it's more of a barrier to some people's minds. So you tend to ask, you know, you're about to do a transfer, so have you had advice? No, I don't feel like I would like advice. So have you spoken to pension wise no, you're now just putting problems in place, so to speak. I've made my decision, I want to crack on with it. I wonder if there's a degree of that, but I wouldn't have put that cohort to be large enough to cause the drop we've seen in this edition of the FCA retirement income data. This one does, if I'm being honest, puzzles me a bit. And that's why I wonder whether actually Stronger Nudge has been a fantastic success and it's actually just falling under a different name.
Yeah, interesting. And how do you think this kind of data is going to, you know, tie in with the FCA's kind of retirement income advice review? Because obviously we've just had that come out and I've been speaking to a few people and they've said, you know, we don't think this is the end of it. We think maybe part two could be on the way, or, you know, part three, or this is their kind of new focus, you know, we're looking at retirement income and kind of the advice and the guidance and people getting that way, because it's, you know, they've all come out at a similar time, like they all marry together, the advice, guidance, boundary, retirement income, like advice review. They all sit in a nice little package together. But
so I think the Consumer Duty and Vulnerable Customers work, and that sort of overlaps with a lot of this. My interpretation of the retirement advice thematic review was that was looking quite narrowly at the provision of advice. So there's two different things here. There's the broader policy issue around how are people accessing their pensions more generally, and a lot of that is not advised, and a lot of that overlaps with the work that DWP is doing in occupational pension space. The retirement advice review was kind of like, essentially, are IFAs doing their jobs properly? And it pointed to some strong hints about ways that IFAs could demonstrate that they're doing their jobs properly. And if it's not written down, you're not doing your job properly. And if you can't prove it, you're not doing your job properly. And if you're not reviewing it regularly, you're not doing your job properly. And all that kind of stuff. Are you using a cash flow modeler? Well, you don't have to, but if you're not, we'll be interested to see how you can demonstrate that you came to the right decision here, and so on. So all of that. And to me, that sits slightly to one side of this broader question of, Is the retirement income market as a whole functioning effectively?
Yeah. And Mark, I didn't know if you had anything to kind of add there.
No, I think I agree with you, Amy. I think what we're seeing is an evolution. And I think a key point to get across is actually how pleasing it is to see the regulator engage with the industry on this, because I think there's certain things the industry have been sort of saying, no, we want to sort this out, and if we are below par or we're not doing things the way that you see things, let's have an open discussion about it. So you know, I would just like to sort of commend the regulator for the way that it's gone about these last couple of reviews. I think there was a big disappointment when we sort of said that retirement income wasn't going to be captured within this first edition, but I think that will probably be rethought pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, we'll have to come back to this next year when it comes out again and see if we've got a different government and how, if anything's changed, if we can see a dashboard or something. We'll have to come back in a year's time and see if anything's changed. But I won't hold my breath for now. I think these things take time. Well, indeed. Tom, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. And tune in next week where we will discuss other goings on in the industry.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.